Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, March 18th, 2025. We begin on the front page with State Government Fighting the Screens. Illinois educators largely in support of cell phone ban in schools. This is by Michael Molson with Lee Enterprises. During his State of the State address last month, Governor J.B. Pritzker spoke of the importance of improving the classroom environment and limiting distractions. And to do so, he has proposed a cell phone ban policy for Illinois schools. In conversations with educators and parents around this state, there is one thing that they commonly cite as an impediment to learning in the classroom: cell phones, Pritzker said. The two bills in the Illinois House, HB 2964 and HB 2975, which have been filed by Representative Curtis J. Tarver, a Democrat from Chicago, and by Representative Tracy Katz Moule, a Democrat from Northbrook, and the Illinois Senate, and in the Illinois Senate by Senator Christina Castro, a Democrat from Elgin, would require Illinois school districts to enact a set of policies banning cell phones during classroom instruction. Castro said part of her reasoning for drafting the bill was because many of her constituents, including many teachers, have complained that cell phones are disrupting their classes. They, the school districts, haven't done a very good job of regulating cell phone policies, Castro said. The bills would not require a blanket policy, so districts would be able to regulate their cell phone ban policies as much or as little as they want. The governor's proposal is really a balanced approach to limiting electronic devices in the classroom, said Tony Sanders, state superintendent of education. It doesn't go so far as to tell school districts exactly how they should implement it. It still allows for students to use their phones in the event of emergencies or when a school district determines it's appropriate. It allows school districts to determine how they will enforce it and really how they even approach it. Pritzker's goals for the ban are threefold: to limit distraction of cell phones in classrooms, to help foster social interactions among students by eliminating the barrier of cell phones, and to try to deter cyberbullying while students are in school. The cell phone ban would have some exceptions, such as if a student needs their device to monitor a health condition, or for students with special needs to fulfill an individualized education program. These bills are expected to be heard this week in committee discussions while lawmakers are in session. According to Pew Research, 72% of U.S. high school teachers say cell phone distraction is a major problem in classrooms. Brendan Thornton, an English teacher at Bloomington High School, said that in some classes, students will prop up their phones and watch Netflix or scroll through social media. "When we're fighting the screens, we can't compete with the newest season of Stranger Things," Thornton said. "I can't compete with Sabrina Carpenter's new album." Right now, Illinois schools are not required to have cell phone policies in place. But if they do have one, it is determined by the school district. Policies vary, with some being more strict and others giving students more leeway. In Bloomington School District 87, which includes Bloomington High School, students are allowed to use their devices before and after class. It is up to the teacher's discretion on how students use their phones while in class, according to the BHS handbook. Thornton said he can write up students for using their phones, but that feels like a waste of time to do so, as many students will use their phones during class anyway. "On a day-to-day, if I were to sit down and write up every person who breaks that policy, I would be spending a good chunk of my day documenting the amount of kids who were, in fact, on their phone," Thornton said. Meanwhile, the Springfield Public School District 186 Student and Family Handbook says students cannot be on their phones during class periods or in passing periods. Students must also keep their devices out of sight, the handbook says. Staffers do have phone boxes that they offer to keep students' phones in during class time. Like Bloomington and Springfield, many other school districts, including in Champaign and Peoria, have also adopted some variation of a cell phone ban policy. Research that went into the drafting of the statewide cell phone ban bill came from these schools, according to Sanders. Certainly looked at the research that's coming out of districts that have implemented a ban and the improvements that they've seen around the social and emotional needs of students, around the decrease in bullying, everything that is what we want to see in schools lean into right now is improved by doing something to restrict cell phone access during instructional time, Sanders said. If the cell phone ban were to pass, Illinois would be joining California, Florida, Indiana, Louisiana, Minnesota, Ohio, South Carolina, and Virginia, which have already passed some variation of a cell phone ban. So far, the bill is receiving bipartisan support from legislators, and most educators agree there needs to be some sort of phone ban. Kyle Thompson, Regional Superintendent of Regional Office of Education 11, which oversees more than 30 school districts in East Central Illinois, including Mattoon, Shelbyville, and Oakland, said he believes a ban on cell phones in schools is necessary, but he wishes the proposed legislation would go a bit further. I would like to see phone-free schools, Thompson said. I don't believe this legislation is really going to make phone-free schools. There's a difference between requiring policy and actually having a true phone-free school. As long as the phones are allowed in school, phones will be a problem. As long as students can have them at lunch, they're going to videotape fights. As long as students can have them at their lockers and at lunch, they're not going to look up and talk to their peers. Florida has some of the strictest legislation when it comes to cell phone policies in schools. The state bans cell phones completely during class time and prohibits social media use while on district Wi-Fi. Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders' Bell to Bell No Cell Act, if passed, would go a step further, as it would ban smartphones and other personal electronic devices like smartwatches from every single public school in Arkansas, beginning in the 2025-26 school year. Some Illinois schools have already tried going phone-free. Ahead of this current school year, Gibson City Melvin Sibley Elementary School Principal Justin Keene announced on the district's Facebook page that cell phones would no longer be allowed in the building. Now, more than a semester in, Keene has been met with applause. When we made the decision and publicized that that was going to be the plan, multiple parents emailed or called or saw me in the community and said, "Hey, thank you for that. I appreciate it." Because they're fighting their own kids about wanting to have phones or wanting to have them in school and things like that. So the fact that we made a rule now, they don't have to have that fight at home anymore, Keene said. He said he thinks the policy has had a positive effect in helping students in their social interactions. In the bus lines, instead of somebody burying their head on their phone, they're having conversations and being kids, Keene said. Overall, Keene said students have mixed feelings about the elementary school's cell phone policy. I think we have students that are happy with the policy because the cell phone was maybe a distraction or maybe a worry because they didn't have one and others did, Keene said. And then I think we have some that probably aren't real excited about it because they would prefer to be able to have it and be able to play a game or something like that during free time. Back in Bloomington, Thornton said he is hopeful that Pritzker's proposed cell phone ban could become state law, as it is difficult to enforce BHS's current policy of leaving the issue up to teachers. "I think that's the hard part now," Thornton said. "I don't have a lot of teeth to my policy because I can't say this is the school policy. It's my policy, and that doesn't handle as much weight as this is the school policy, and especially when you're talking to parents. So I think saying like, oh, this is state law, that's a very easy sell." Sanders said one of the pros of this bill could be deterring of fights of schools. Students often use their cell phones to organize fights through texts or social media and then to record them, he explained. As a former district superintendent, I would see students coordinating fights, coordinating events that would really distract during the school day while they were on school grounds. So, to the extent that we can protect them while they're on school grounds, I think that's one of the added benefits, Sanders said. Sarah Marley's daughter attends Central A&M High School in Moquegua. She feels that her daughter and other students' cell phones are causing lapses in their education, and she is supportive of a statewide cell phone policy. Currently, Central A&M High School allows students to use their cell phones in the office and in classrooms, but only with a teacher's consent, according to the school handbook. I would go as far to say any time that they are in an academic classroom, having access to a cell phone is too much of a distraction, Marley said. So in any classroom setting, it should be either checked at the door or checked at the beginning of the day. Some parents may be concerned that they won't be able to get a hold of their kids during the day or in the case of an emergency. Others say they trust school staffers to coordinate any needed communication during the school day, including during any emergency situations. Josh Mlott of Normal, father of a Parkside Junior High School student and Parkside Elementary School student in McLean County, Unit 5, said parents should trust the adults working at the schools. I'm just more concerned about some of the problems that cell phones in the classrooms can create than I am about the very low likelihood of an emergency where a cell phone would truly make a difference, he said. In my experience, our teachers and administrators are pretty well trained in handling those kinds of emergencies. Senator Castro said local law enforcement have been supportive of a cell phone ban bill because it would help them do their jobs in case of a school emergency. They want students to be focused on following safety protocols that they have been taught and trained, as well as making sure they're focusing on their teacher's instructions during a crisis, Castro said. They don't want students focusing on their cell phones, calling parents, posting on social media, because it also hurts them. Castro's cell phone ban bill was referred to the Senate's Assignments Committee on February 6th, and has not moved since. Tarver's and Katz-Muhl's bills were both assigned to the Education Policy Committee, but have not received a hearing yet. An article related to Women's History Month, we have That's What She Said, shows Give Women a Seat at the Table by Caitlin Klepek with the Pantograph. For National Director Jeanette Jerzyk, leading the She Said project has been a true calling and a gift. That's What She Said, which celebrated its fifth year in the Twin Cities in September, serves as a platform for women to share their stories to empower and support each other. The show brings together 8 to 10 women who take the stage and share a story about their life before an audience of supporters. Women have been told for generations not to talk about themselves, not to take up space. I believe that by giving women permission to stand loud and proud and to be seen and be heard, it shows other women it's okay, too, Jerzyk said. The project started in Champaign in 2013 when 3 women were watching their daughters play in the backyard and brainstorming ways to make the world a better place. The 3 women, Carrie Rosso, Jill Purs, and Casey Wakefield, came up with the concept to create a safe space for women to come together and share their stories. Initially, they thought the show would be a one-time thing. But after the widespread support from the Champaign community, the She Said project continued to grow. Jerzyk, who has a background in theater with a bachelor's and master's degree from the University of Illinois, met Rosso, Purs, and Wakefield in 2015 while the women were preparing for a 3rd show in Champaign. Unsatisfied with her career in real estate, Jerzyk said she was looking for a way to foster her creative side. She offered her services to the 3 founders who assigned Jerzyk to direct the Champaign shows. She quickly learned the development process, which takes about 3 to 4 months and consists of finding, nurturing, and practicing the stories, Jerzyk said. She used her theater background to help teach women how to share their stories in front of a crowd of hundreds. The That's What She Said shows took a hiatus between 2018 and 19 while the founders shifted their focus to other things, Jerzyk said. With their blessing, she then began to expand the model, bringing the show to new cities. Jerzyk introduced the show to Bloomington Normal in 2019. I built the show one coffee date at a time, she said. She brought together the cast and sponsors through networking and building connections, asking everyone she knew if they knew any woman who might be interested in supporting, Jerzyk said. I remember it was nerve-wracking, and I was thinking of all the worst-case scenarios, said Philae Sebastian, who spoke at the Bloomington Normal launch of That's What She Said in 2019. I had so many what-ifs, but on the stage, I would be there in flesh and blood, and they can see and hear me. Sebastian, founder of Labyrinth Outreach Services at YWCA McLean County, said she connected with the She Said Project when its organizers selected her as charity partner for the That's What She Said show. The project donated a percentage of proceeds from ticket sales to Labyrinth. Through the writing, editing, and rehearsing process, Sebastian said she and the other nine women who spoke at her panel became like sisters, many even remaining in touch to this day. The Labyrinth founder shared a story she called Beloved, detailing the almost 40 years she spent intertwined with an unhealthy attachment to a person and her journey to sobriety, freedom, and inner peace. Through that onstage exposure, I found out that I was not alone in my experience, Sebastian said. Sebastian, who has also shared her story in a book titled Broken and Beloved, says she hears from readers and people who attended the show who say she has given them the courage to walk away from destructive relationships. You just don't know whose life you can touch, Sebastian said. We are all connected in some ways. We are here to inspire and help one another. Collections of Voices has power. As someone who had shared her story many times, Vicki Tilton, owner of Fox & Hounds Salon and Day Spa, said she thought that That's What She Said would be a piece of cake. In the 2024 show, Tilton shared the story of how she had been kicked out of school when she was 15 years old for being pregnant, and her voyage back to community and connection with her high school classmates years later. The whole process was a huge wake-up call for me, Tilton said, of telling her story. I had no idea people wanted to hear it and would really benefit from what I had to say. Tilton said she wanted to use her story to show how small gestures of kindness can affect a person's life. Not only did her story inspire that in herself, but it formed a connection with her co-speakers and the audience, she said. Tilton also recalled being so moved by the woman who spoke before her that she could hardly speak. There became an immeasurable bond between us all. The new friends I made will always have a special place in my heart, Tilton said. Sebastian and Tilton spoke highly of working with Jerzyk as a director, listing several ways she helped them to perfect their stories and supported them along the way through team building and tips and tricks used by professional actors. Tilton and Sebastian both encouraged others to get involved with the She Said project. In all the shows, Jerzyk said the speakers bring stories that are new, different, relatable, or able to open up someone's eyes to an experience. We truly believe every woman has a seat at the table. There is no race, religion, background, or sexual orientation that could separate us, Jerzyk said. Through this project, Jerzyk said women who normally wouldn't cross paths are able to connect with one another through sharing their stories. This year, That's What She Said has expanded across state lines, bringing the show to Iowa, Indiana, and all the way to Georgia. Jerzyk said TWSS is a licensing model in which women in other communities can license the rights and get the training to launch a That's What She Said show in their own cities. I would love to see That's What She Said coast to coast around the world, Jerzyk said. The She Said project has also expanded to include a teens event called That's What Teens Say and a podcast hosted by Jerzyk and Rosso, one of the co-founders. The Teens Empowerment Program has celebrated its third year in Bloomington. normal in January, in partnership with the Family Community Resource Center. Over a three-day intensive weekend, that's what teens say, gives young women the opportunity to connect through interactive activities before getting up on a stage to tell their stories in front of an audience. Belinda Kennedy, CEO of the Family Community Resource Center, said she was first inspired by That's What She Said when she saw an out-of-town show. It was such an overwhelming response, the way women come out and express themselves, Kennedy said. She attended the teens program, and after seeing them speak and the encouragement they shared, Kennedy said she decided to bring Teen Say to the Family Community Resource Center starting last year. They learn how to network, public speaking, communication, and writing skills. Those are soft skills they'll be able to take with them forever, Kennedy said. To learn more about participating in a That's What She Said show, visit shesaidproject.com/opportunities. Everyone has a story. Life is filled with stories, whether they're the heartbreaking, inspiring, funny, or ridiculous. It's amazing when you give women the space to take these stories and weave them together into a beautiful tapestry, Jerzyk said. Here is some local brief news. We have more than 7,000 students will see state parks, natural areas, museums, and other Illinois sites teaching nature and conservation in 2025 thanks to the Illinois Biodiversity Field Trip Program. More than $99,000 in funding was awarded for 113 student field trip grants, reaching 32 counties in the state, according to an announcement from the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. IDNR Director Natalie Phelps Finney said such field trips help students tour outdoor locations to witness firsthand what they've learned about in their classrooms. Our future conservation leaders need the opportunity to experience Illinois' natural resources in person, the director said. Prairie Central Elementary School in Fairbury is among the grant recipients. The school's second grade class will go to Fugate Woods in Fairbury using a $5,400 grant. The University of Illinois Extension will offer a series of seated Tai Chi programs in Livingston County this spring. The Illinois Extension said studies show practicing Tai Chi for arthritis eases pains, prevents falls, and improves quality of life. Sessions will be held from 9 to 10 a.m. on April 22nd, 24th, and 29th, and on May 2nd, 8th, 13th, 15th, and 19th, led by Sarah Attig, Family Life Educator for Illinois Extension. The Tai Chi lessons will take place at the Livingston County Extension Office at 1412 South Locust Street in Pontiac. This program aims to enhance muscular strength, flexibility, and fitness. Attig said she hopes to empower seniors to improve balance, alleviate pain and stiffness, and increase confidence. Organizers recommend participants commit to the full four-week program based on the class format. To register, visit go.illinois.edu/seated tai chi or call 815-842-1776. And the McLean County Chamber of Commerce will host its annual Agricultural Awareness Breakfast on Wednesday, March 19th. The breakfast presented by GrowMark will be held 7 to 8:30 a.m. at the Interstate Center at 1106 Interstate Drive in Bloomington. The event aims to raise awareness about the agriculture industry and will honor FFA Service Award winners and Maitland Scholarship Fund recipients, according to a news release from the Chamber. Lindsay Rinkenberger, Director of Commercial Agribusiness Underwriting Operations and Data Analytics at Country Financial, will be the keynote speaker. Her address is titled, The Next 100 Years, Celebrating Our Heritage While Serving Tomorrow's Farm Clients. The McLean County Farm Bureau will also present a check to the Children's Discovery Museum for its new agricultural exhibit, the news release said. Looking at Illinois history, we have Deadliest U.S. Tornado Remembered by John O'Connor. From Logan School's top floor, 11-year-old Othella Sylvie should have been able to see her house easily. It was less than 2 blocks away. But after a monstrous tornado ripped through the Illinois town of Murfreesboro on March 18, 1925, Othella saw nothing but flattened wasteland. She couldn't tell which direction was home, said her daughter, 81-year-old Sylvia Carvel. The deadliest twister recorded in U.S. history struck 100 years ago Tuesday, touching down in southeastern Missouri and tearing up everything in its 219-mile path for nearly 4 hours through southern Illinois and into Indiana. It left 695 people dead and more than 2,000 injured, not counting the casualties from at least 7 other twisters that the main storm spawned, which spun off through Kentucky and into Alabama. Modern standards qualify the so-called tri-state tornado as an F5, a mile-wide funnel with wind speeds greater than 260 miles per hour. Perhaps the best evidence of its destructive handiwork was found on the Logan School grounds, a wooden board measuring 4 feet long by 8 inches wide, driven so deeply into the trunk of a maple tree that it could hold the weight of a man. It's on display this month as part of the Jackson County Historical Society's centennial commemoration of the disaster. You know the numbers, 200 miles per hour winds, it was a mile wide, but the force that it took to put that pine board into that maple tree, it really puts it all into perspective, said Mary Reislin, coordinator of the 6-Day Remembrance. To have one item that was witness to the force of those winds, it's a story all of its own. The atmospheric stew that gave birth to the ferocious cataclysm was literally a perfect storm. A surface low-pressure system located over the Arkansas-Missouri border moved northeast, blending with a warm front moving north, said Christine Welgos, warning coordinator meteorologist for the National Weather Service. That churn provided the warmth, the instability, the moisture, which, when married perfectly, produced long-track violent tornadoes. Adding to the terror was the lack of notice. There was no reliable storm forecasting in 1925 and no warning system anyway. All they had was they looked off to the west and went, looking a little dark out there, and didn't even know what it was until it was right up on them and then you're scrambling to find shelter. The storm took out 40% of the city of Murfreesboro, 97 miles southeast of St. Louis. Its 234 deaths were the most of any municipality, with entire neighborhoods flattened. Other towns were virtually obliterated too, including Annapolis, Missouri, Gorham, Illinois, and Griffith, Indiana. The Mobile and Ohio Railroad yards, employing close to 1,100 people, were wiped out. At the Twister's next stop, it ravaged the DeSoto School, killing 38 children. Murfreesboro rebuilt. Othella Sylvie's family erected a home identical to the one that had been leveled. First, they built a chicken coop, which supplied not only their primary dietary staple for months, but their shelter until the residence was finished. To this day, the west side of Murfreesboro is peppered with small backyard structures that were temporary quarters until families could rebuild larger homes at the front of their lots. Dozens of families who toughed it out remain in Murfreesboro. Jackson County Historical Society President Laura Cates Duncan said the commemoration honors those who died, but also celebrates the resilience of those who carried on. And with that, we complete the reading of Part 1 of the Pantograph for Tuesday, March 18th, 2025. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with Part 2.